Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everybody, to Cinema Royale. I am Travis Hobson, the Punch Drunk Critics. And on this week's show, we're going to be talking about, you know what we were talking about, Ready Player One, Steven Spielberg's adaptation of Ernest Cline's 2011 novel, which, you know, I think if you're of my age, I guess, grew up in the 80s and the 90s, Ready Player One is probably a novel that you've come to love. But there's been some questions about this adaptation, about whether or not it will fully capture the nostalgia that is in that book, especially since, you know, it has to reach out to a much broader audience than I think Cline's novel is inclined to do. So we're going to talk about that in just a few minutes with my buddy Matt Razak of Flixis.com. As well as a whole bunch of other stuff. There's a lot that went on this week, actually, from the Deadpool series that got canceled and Donald Glover's reaction to it, which is hilarious. Jurassic World 3, it's got a new director, same as the old director. And some really crazy stuff going on with New Mutants, which kind of disturbed me. So, but before we get to that, before I bring that on here, I want to thank everybody who's continued to tune in to Cinema Royale every week. I appreciate it. You guys make this fun. I want to thank all of you who have been tuning in to Critical, the Movie Critics Network here on Blog Talk Radio. I've got a lot of great shows, you know that. Joanna Langfield and her Movie Minute. My buddy Chris Bunbury and Paul Sheary from JoeBlow.com and their Beard and the Bald show, which I actually listened to. I finally sat down and listened to it a couple of days ago, this most recent episode, and I really dug it. So check that out, and a whole bunch more, a whole lot of other stuff. So you can follow us, follow Critical on Blog Talk Radio, and of course on Facebook. I've spent the last couple of days over at AwesomeCon here in DC, quickly becoming one of my favorite festivals. I mean, Comic-Con is always going to be number one for me, but AwesomeCon is really growing in size. This is only its sixth year. It's gotten pretty huge. I like that they seem to be having a better mix of things than Comic-Con does. Comic-Con is so heavily steered towards movies and TV now. You can still find literally anything you want to do. You can find a group for it at Comic-Con, and it's starting to get that way at AwesomeCon too. I mean, the panels I attended were mostly wrestling panels. I think I attended two of those. I attended a Q&A with Sean Gunn. John Boyega was there. You know, a whole bunch of people from TV. Stephen Amell was there. Practically half the cast of Guardians of the Galaxy was there. There's a lot of people there this year. They are really kicking butt when it comes to getting guests. But I love the diversity of the whole thing, and they're really doing a great job building that show. And I hope to talk to the festival founder, Ben Penrod, soon. I did talk to him when I was there. I was supposed to do a spot with him on News Channel 8, but we couldn't get the timing down. So I know some of you saw my spot on Friday because I've gotten messages about it. So thank you for that. But yeah, Ben was supposed to be there and he couldn't make it. And that's cool. We'll talk to him again soon. Certainly after the whole thing wraps up today. But enough of that. Let's talk about Ready Player One. Let's bring on Matt Razak. What up, Matt? How you doing, man?
Hey, I'm good. How are you?
I'm good, man. Happy Easter.
You too.
Yeah, good. So let's talk about Ready Player One, because I know how you feel. I knew this was going to be the case. I had a feeling that you were gonna have issues with it. I think we had talked about it a little bit, and I kind of had an idea. I mean, look, your fears were the same as my fears, you know. But I think both of us have a different opinion on whether or not those fears were realized. So
pulled it off.
You saw that South by Southwest. What did you give me your thoughts and kind of tell me what the temperature of the screening was at South by Southwest too, because that I don't know.
Yeah, so I mean it was the surprise screening at South by Southwest, so and the biggest one obviously. I mean pulling a major blockbuster like that is pretty huge. The line for it was stretching around multiple blocks. I was actually since it was a last minute thing, there were like two press seats that they gave to other places. So I was waiting in line, and I was like, me and this guy in line were like the last of three people in. Like it was nail biting getting into it. Yeah. But Spielberg was there, the entire cast was there. Everyone was super hyped for it. And I was excited too. I enjoyed the book.
Before we go too much further, let me tell people, it's like that at Sundance too. I mean, we are journalists, but don't think that we get preferential treatment for these surprise screenings. We don't.
Right.
We don't get them. Like Get Out was like you better get your butt there. And then this is like, for Tully, it's like you better get your butt there. We don't get any preferential treatment for those things. Not anymore. So, but go ahead.
So it was really hyped. Spielberg came out and, you know, talked about how it was a passion project and how after reading the book he really wanted to get it done, et cetera, et cetera.
Steven Spielberg's passion project was a project with a whole bunch of Steven Spielberg references in it. That's interesting.
Yeah. Huh. Who knew? We watched it, obviously. Afterwards, I was probably not as enthused as most of the other people coming out of it. I think the general opinion is that it's good and enjoyable, and I'm just sort of middle of the road on it. So most of the people around me had more fun than I did, I guess. But I found it seriously lacking in almost every aspect except for its action sequences. Mm-hmm. And because of that, I didn't think the action, I thought the action sequences were fun, but I would have rather just watched those sequences as like awesome fan made YouTube nostalgia parties, you know, and obviously they wouldn't be as good because Spielberg does. I mean, he's just fantastic at action and everything ever, but
great at visual storytelling. That's his trait.
Yeah, but in between those parts, there was nothing for me. I thought the love story sucked. I thought it spent way too much time doing exposition at the beginning. I thought its conclusion was rushed, and I thought they handled the Easter egg hunt. I understand they had it was good that they changed a lot of aspects from the book, because those things really wouldn't have worked. They were way too niche in the book. Yeah. Like the car chase is a great great way, was a great shift And the Shining part was my favorite. I thought that worked. I thought
everybody's favorite. It's awesome.
Right. Yeah. It's so well done. And you could tell, like, you could, I saw a few, like, in other reviews that said, you know, it was like, it felt like Steven Spielberg was geeking out next to me at every moment of the film. That part was the only, you could tell, I thought, when Spielberg cared about the references. And when, and at other times when he was sort of just shoving things in there to be shoved in there, or the studio was saying, we need more or something. So that's
I never got that impression. I've talked to some people who've said similar things like that. Like, I felt like Spielberg was geeking out. For one thing, I don't believe for a second that Spielberg knows a thing about any of those video games that he was referencing. Like, I don't think he knows what Overwatch is. I don't think he cares. I don't know if he ever played Battletoads, but I seriously doubt it. But you know, I don't even know if he's ever watched Gundam before. I really don't know. But you're right. I never got that impression either, except for The Shining. That was like the only part where I felt like Steven Spielberg was like having an incredible amount of fun.
Yeah,
you know, being able to recreate that. But for me, you know, I felt like the changes that had to be made, they need to be made so bad, because no one wants to, well, I would like to watch a movie where a guy goes through a pre 8-bit video game and goes looking around and for clues, you know, like towards the finale of the movie. If there were like, you know, two or three challenges like that, people would freak out. Like, this is really boring.
Right. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And those changes, that car chase was, the car chase in the beginning was what was needed to be done. And the way the ending concluded was far more coherent than the book's conclusion. I don't have an issue with them changing things. I just didn't think the changes they made worked overall.
Yeah, and look, there's a lot that they change. I went to the screening with my buddy Ronnie, who is also a really deep fan of the book, and he had the exact same concerns that you, me, and probably a million other people had. You know, and when we were watching the car chase, we were like, okay, this is going to be drastically different from the book, right away. Okay, so we both came to an agreement right there. It's like, okay, we need to reevaluate the movie differently from this point on. And I actually kind of think that was the reason why Spielberg put that in there so early, so that people who were watching it, who are fans of the book, knew, hey, this is not going to be the book. This is, if you're looking for that, you need to know that right away, rather than kind of springing it on them later, or doing it gradually, like, with all these little tiny changes all throughout the movie. Nah, he's letting you know right now, this is going to be different, and different in a big way. And I think that was probably, if you're going to do that, that's the best way to handle it. You know, that's the best way to just get it out of the way, tear the Band-Aid off, and just like, okay,
this isn't your book. I mean, you know, we've gone in a different direction.
Right. Exactly. And I think that's the best way to do it. I would have been more angry if he had done it the other way. And I'd be sitting here nitpicking everything, like, bit by bit by bit.
Yeah. Right. And then that makes it so you can't, like, you can't, there, you, I don't see anyone out there complaining, oh, they changed it from the book too much. Right. You know, like, no, I haven't seen that complaint. And usually you go to these and they're like, they missed that part. I mean, if this was Harry Potter, people would be burning houses down right now. I think the nature of the book and the fact that they fully committed to drastically changing it. Really let people accept that it is completely different.
Yeah, but there are changes that I don't think necessarily work. And I think I agree with you to a certain extent that a lot of it has to do with the characters that were changed. I mean, I guess I would say I'm not a big fan of how they I'm not a big fan of the relationship between Parzival and Artemis. Although I like them separately as characters just fine. In fact, I think Artemis is pretty cool in the movie as well as she is in the book. I think they do away with some of the mystery of her character. There's just not time. There's not enough time that they dedicate to building these characters up at all. And that same goes for Parzival. Like, I don't understand why he's the guy. Like, they didn't make it clear to us why he's the guy who is basically the chosen one to solve this massively difficult Easter egg. Yeah. Like, they don't establish that. Like, in the book, we know this guy is like a fully committed a holiday nerd. Like, he knows everything. Like, and they at least give you some idea of why he would be the guy to do it. I don't know if the movie did that so well.
It was so exposition heavy in the beginning. Like, this is everything. Mm-hmm. These are the characters, and everyone's here, and now we're gonna go. And then it was just go. And I don't know why there wasn't. Spielberg knows better than this. Like, you structurally build a movie so that exposition comes in more naturally than that. And that was one of the things it missed, because it had all that stuff at the beginning. So you didn't have the ability to sort of explain why he's chosen. And because of that, it's sort of just, I mean, a lot of the puzzle solving and is like, seem like luck, you know, like, oh yeah. The reason he goes to investigate that, the race car puzzle. The reason he goes to do that is because she says some random word. Artemis says some random word, and it reminds him of something that reminds him of that video. So how is that puzzle supposed to be solved?
Oh, the whole thing, in terms of the finding of the keys, the clues were super weak. I mean, super weak. They were not that. They weren't really that geeky. They were just kind of like,
you happen to watch the right video at the right time. Okay. Action sequence, you know, and then. So tell me why you.
And they weren't pop culture things either, is the thing that really bugged me. Is they were holiday things. You know, like the, in the book, they were like figuring out some journey song that he loved, or some reference from a journey song, and then that would lead you to an important clue or something like that. But in the movie, it wasn't it. It was just like, kind of go to this place, watch some key dates in Halliday's life, and figures. Like, I'm wondering why more people didn't figure these things out, because they didn't seem that hard.
Yeah. That exactly, right? And that was like, part of it was like, you know, the 10-year process in the first one, and then it's a lot of really difficult months on end research and stuff. And I guess that's not exciting, but it did come across as kind of epically easy, or if it's not easy, just dumb luck instead of actual.
It didn't seem plausible that Ben Mendelsohn's crew, those guys, Sorrento, that they couldn't have figured it out with hundreds of people who are all just as smart as Wade and Artemis, that they couldn't figure it out. That they couldn't figure out none of it. Especially when you consider that Sorrento actually worked with Holiday. It's like, none of this stuff seems logical to me.
Yeah, and they had that team of nerds there, like, who were, like, clearly, it was clearly educated and a crack team, so you didn't have, like, there was no real understanding there about why these guys could not figure out what, you know, five guys in a moving truck could in 10 seconds. And speaking of that, the sort of outside versus inside world, I didn't like the casting, because, you know, in the book they're far, you know, he's a pimply overweight nerd. And like, and so you get this huge dichotomy between the outside world and Oasis, which is one of the, you know, more cerebral and in-depth thought-provoking things in the book, which doesn't really have that much thought-provoking content in it, to be honest. But like, you lose that where when both lead actors are, you know, they're Hollywood actors. They look good. He didn't look, you know, he didn't look like an outcast or anything. There was no dichotomy between the inside world for him and the outside world. It just felt like he was action leader in both, which kind of rang a little hollow to me as well, because that was one of the core parts of the book.
They really didn't do a great job of setting up the outside world as, and for how awful it is in the books. Like, it's truly awful for every single person who was there. We didn't really get that sense. Yeah, you had people living in the stacks, which you know, looks like a really tall ghetto. But we don't get a sense of why everything is so bad, like what everybody's missing that drives them into the oasis for most of their lives. You know, we didn't really get that sense. They could have done a better job with that. And I agree with you. We don't really get a sense of why, of, well, what's so bad for Wade? What's so bad for
Wade?
And, you know, Artemis, she's, I think she's very different depicted on the screen by Olivia Cooke than she is imagined to be in the books. Very different, actually. So the only one I thought they got right was H. I think they did a pretty good job with H.
Yeah, they did. I thought they got H well, and Saito and the other character, the two Asian characters. They weren't really on the screen enough to really get it, and the younger one was basically just a punchline every time he spoke. But they weren't incredibly off base.
Right. For me the cool stuff was what won me over for this movie. I could look past the differences from the book. You know, I can if I wanted to, I could harp on them. But there were so many scenes in there that I really did enjoy, from the race scene to the Shining scene. I love that big battlefield fight towards the end of the movie. I thought that was really well done, even though it's kind of a cluster bomb of characters thrown in there. It's just so much going on. But there are a couple of really nice moments with characters that I love that I really hoped to see from the book that were cool. My complaint is that, you know, it loses some personality because it needs to appeal to a wider audience in a wider time frame. Giant doesn't really make sense there. You know, I like seeing the Iron Giant there, and he's a cool addition to the movie, he doesn't really make sense there. Not really.
Yeah. Well, and the references were all, I mean,
how they were so specific.
Yeah, exactly. And why does every single avatar in the game world, except for our five leads, why are they all cultural references to the 80s, 90s, and 2000s? Like, there was, every time it cut away, like the battle at the end, that's a bunch of people's avatars that they, wanted to be Freddy Krueger. What, you know, there was that. So that was part of it feeling forced to me. And I guess the difference between you and I are that you could overlook that. And like, for the final battle, I was just sitting there annoyed, like, that it was, it didn't feel for me.
There are thousands of avatars running around there, and most of them are generic.
Yes.
Most of them are pretty generic looking, which I guess are just people's avatars, regular avatars. And then there are a few that they highlight that are recognizable characters. Yes.
Right.
So, I mean, I agree with you in one extent, but I see why no one would care about watching all those generic avatars running around.
Yeah, I know why it was done. By the end, like in the car chase, I was all on board. I was having fun. But by the end, through all the references and I was just sort of like, I don't get the feeling that you actually care about this. Like, I feel like you're just throwing things in there. And that stuck more than enjoying the action. And because I felt like the plot was rushed and the relationships are rushed, it all built up into a movie. I was just kind of like, Yeah, I could have fun with these scenes, but I don't think it's worth sitting through the movie for it.
Right. Yeah, I hear you. Do you think this is a case of too much nostalgia? I mean, what would you say in that regard? Cause I guess there can be, but I guess I'm curious if you think that's the case with this movie.
Yeah, I probably would have enjoyed it more if like there hadn't been 20 cutaways to 50 characters all running for a split second, you know, like if the nostalgia had been all as beloved and used as well as the Shining segment, like
right.
if it had been less heavy and like, I get the point of the book and the point of the movie is this massive, like, oh, everyone's here. Let's all, you know, battle with all the things we love from the 80s and 90s. But if in the book, at least you get the feeling that like everything he's writing about, he cares about. Not, I mean, yes, it gets a little overboard in the book too, but it just didn't feel like they cared about what was going on screen. It was more like they threw it up there. So if they had taken it back and had Spielberg be like, these are the things I really understand and care about, and I'm super nerdy about, that's
right.
The movie I want to see. I want to see Steven Spielberg does his own nostalgia, not Steven Spielberg does everyone's nostalgia.
Right. And that's a good point. We also got to remember that, the difference between movies and books is there are rights issues involved.
I think he
couldn't do that if he wanted to for most of that stuff. Like, he couldn't even get Star Wars like to be right. in there
yeah.
at all.
I don't know why Disney, Star Wars and Marvel.
Right. I imagine he'd probably have the same difficulty if he wanted to reference anything from Indiana Jones. So he probably couldn't have even done it. So, I mean, but I get what you're saying. And, you know, Klein did help write the script for this movie too. Zach Penn did also helped co-write it. Zach Penn is kind of a hit or miss screenwriter for me, but he's a guy who does are geek friendly movies. And that's like basically all Zach Penn does, X-Men movies, Avengers, stuff like this. You know, so I think Zach Penn and Klein get it, and I think they tried their best to like you said, make this a movie for everybody, like everybody's nostalgia. And I think that it is a really, really difficult thing to do. I don't know if anybody could pull off something like that perfectly. I doubt that's even the case. So for me, Ready Player One, it becomes a case of, what's more important to me? Do I have more fun, or do I want to, you know, really harp on the things that don't work as well as they do in the books? And I decided I wanted to fall on the side of having more fun, and I did have more fun with it. So I mean, I'm looking
hate
forward
fun,
to it.
So
I know you hate fun, so that's why you are where you are. I'm anxious to see it in IMAX again, though. I didn't get a chance to see it in IMAX. I'm going to go see it hopefully next weekend and see how it looks.
Now that all these reviews are out, I do, and more people like it more than I did, I want to go rewatch it. You know, it was not the biggest screen. It was a festival screening in a traditionally... theater, like stage theater. So like I do want to see it really big and really large, or at least like I'll rent the Blu-ray or stream it if that's a possibility at some point, and just watch it on like just to appreciate it a bit more, because that part of it was that I was sort of like up in a it was, you know, balcony seating, and I was far away from the screen. So I think I'm not gonna, and I don't want to, you know, I didn't come out of it thinking that sucked. I didn't have fun. I just came out of it thinking it was not what it could have been, and that was really disappointing.
Yep, I hear you, man. All right, so let's take a quick break. Well, actually, before I do that, I'll wait till we come back. quick break, and when we come back, we're gonna dive into some news. I was gonna talk about the box office of Ready Player One, but we're gonna do that on the other side. And just kind of lumping it with everything else. So I'm going to take a quick break, and we will be right back. With my buddy Matt Razak of Flixus.com, and I know he liked that bump music right there. I mean, that was about as perfect a way to start the movie as it could have been. Though you kind of had to start with some.
Yeah. Oh no, no, yeah, and yeah, it was pretty impossible not to go that way.
Just a matter of which song they were going to choose, and that, it was like, okay, that was a pretty good choice. All right, so Ready Player One actually got off to a pretty good start this weekend at the box office. $181 million worldwide, $53 million total here, which is a decent start. I don't know what I was expecting, though. I mean, I don't know if I was expecting it to be huge, you know, because my fear when it comes to movies like Ready Player One is that only, like, the diehards will go see it and then nobody else will go see it.
Right.
But it seems like it's actually playing pretty well overall.
Yeah, I think if you slap Steven Spielberg's name over something, you get, you know, if Steven Spielberg makes a movie, people want to go out and see it.
Unless it's BFG, which nobody wants to see.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good point.
That argument is now invalid.
I'm
still kind of bitter about that, to be honest. The BFG was really good.
Parents clearly don't know anything. They didn't bring their kids to Paddington 2 either. And then Peter Rabbit got massive box office.
Peter Rabbit kicked butt, man. And I'm like, why?
Yeah.
Every week I would do the box office, I was like, why is Peter Rabbit still here? It would not go away.
I have no idea. But Paddington, like, I got way too annoyed about this because Paddington 2 is like one of the best kids movies since Paddington.
It's even better than the first one, which is incredibly good. The first Paddington movie was amazing, and the second one is just as good, if not better. And I was like, why aren't people going to see it? And the first one did good here.
Right. I know the first one had. That's why they made a second. I would love to see like a thesis written on why Paddington 2 did not perform well. Like because it makes no sense.
No sense at all. It's just crazy, man. But Ready Player One, $181 million worldwide.
Yeah,
that's not bad at all. I expect it will do. I think it's going to have legs. It's going to stick around for a while. Because I think people are going to want to go see it in IMAX, like me. I think it's going to stick around for a while, at least
and
through.
It's not going to have anything up against it until Infinity War, right?
Until Infinity War, it's not going to have anything major, I guess, as far as I know. So, it should stick around for a while. My favorite news of the week had to do with Donald Glover's Deadpool. Did you follow that? That whole thing?
Yeah, I did. So, and I saw it like go, I saw his tweet like 5 minutes afterwards. And so at first I'm like drafting a story about how he like put out a real screen, like real rejected screenplay. Cause you know, I didn't read the whole thing. Right off the bat, I just started writing. And then I was like, and then I went back and started to read it to like pull some quotes. I was like, wait a minute. And so, hilarious. Like hands down the funniest thing he could have done in this situation. Like, just,
yeah.
just I said, like, it's so Deadpool. It is exactly what Deadpool would, like.
Well, you know, I mean, for those who don't know, maybe, Donald Glover and his brother Steven were working on a Deadpool animated series for FX. I think it was actually going to be on FXX, the mature version of FX, but it doesn't really matter. No, we had reported on that last year and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, it was supposed to be, he was working on that, and FX pulled out. I mean, they basically said, no, we're not going to move forward with this. And their initial report was the usual creative differences, you know, to which my instant reaction to that was, what kind of weird crap was he trying to do that would be too far for a Deadpool
right.
series? Like,
on FX, like, it's not like FX has that, you know, they do weird stuff.
Right. And it's like, okay, I'd say this must be some weird stuff. So then he puts out this tweet saying, by the way, I was not too busy to work on Deadpool, which that was not one of the reasons I had ever heard that the thing was canceled.
No,
was that he's
not.
He put that out there himself.
Yeah.
So apparently that was an issue. And then he put out this whole, apparently it was a screenplay that he wrote like at that moment, like
yeah.
it was like it
yeah.
was something he wrote that night, I'm guessing in anger.
I can only or he, I mean, I didn't get, like, people were like, wow, he's, you know, salt everywhere. I was like, I didn't get bitterness from it. I got something really hilarious to do, and I'm going to do it. I don't know. It didn't seem like – there was, like, tinges of anger in there, but, like, I thought he was just having fun.
He wouldn't have been able – because if there were actual scripts written for it, he wouldn't have been able to put those out.
Right,
so I think what he was doing was showing people what his Deadpool would have been. Like a flavor
yeah.
of what it would have been. And while he was doing that, he also took jabs at Marvel while he was at it.
Yeah. Which were,
you know?
I mean, and I'd watch that episode. I would watch in a heartbeat. Like, if that came on, it would be praised. Like, cause it was funny. Like,
he sprinkled it with a little bit of bitterness about things that must have come up in meetings, like the Taylor
right.
Swift stuff. You know, like the Taylor
yeah.
Swift comments, you know, about possibly the show being canceled because he took jabs at Taylor Swift. You know,
right.
so, I mean, he sprinkled the script with stuff like that in there. But to me, it didn't read like Deadpool. It read like Deadpool meets the Boondocks meets Atlanta. Like it didn't read like your typical Deadpool comic or like the Deadpool from the movie. It sounded like Donald Glover talking under the Deadpool mask, which is funny. It's still funny, you know, but it's
right.
different. And maybe they didn't want that. I mean, maybe that's what the problem was. Maybe they didn't want that. But
yeah,
Atlanta is, I don't know why they wouldn't.
Yeah. Well, and then you're getting into, like, was it FX or was it Disney coming? Because you can see what
right.
FX would be all over that Deadpool, where Disney might be like, no, this is steering the brand in a direction we do not want.
That's possible too, which I think that is a legit concern. If they have it, that's a legit concern.
Yeah.
You don't want to water down the Deadpool brand, especially.
Yep.
I think the Deadpool as it is like any X-Men related franchise right now is in a state of flux. We don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah, exactly.
Once this deal goes through, nobody knows what's going to happen once this deal goes through. If anybody tells you they do, they're lying. Nobody knows.
One of the
we don't know.
One of the comments on
it. We don't know what's going on.
Yeah, one of the comments on the post I did for it was pretty tinfoil hat, but it sort of was like, this is clearly Disney coming in and saying, hey, we're about to spend a lot of money. Nothing new is happening. Until Fox is ours, you know, which sounds a little much, but you could see it. I mean, if Disney's saying this is the deal, we're going to give you all this money. We don't want anything coming out, you know, a year from now that we didn't greenlight ourselves. And so they're even if something's in production, they're scrapping it.
And you know, and well, I got two responses to that. One, the tinfoil hat thing, it sounds less conspiracy theorist when you think about how people said it was tinfoil hat when people said that Marvel was pulling the X-Men and the Fantastic Four from their comics because of the movies. People thought that was tinfoil hat conspiracy too, until it was proven to be true that they had pulled the X-Men and the Fantastic Four from their comics for almost 2 years because they did not want to promote anything that 20th Century Fox had the rights to, which was, it sounds stupid and detrimental to your own business practices, but they actually did it. So when you think about it in that regard, you're like, maybe it's not so crazy that Marvel called us to Fox. You know what? We don't want to do that. We don't want anybody doing anything with Deadpool that's a little left field right now. You know, so and then on the other hand, it also ties in to everything that seems to be going on with New Mutants and X-Men Dark Phoenix right now, with two movies that were both supposed to come out this year in 2018. Neither was coming out this year. They've both been pushed into 2019. In the case of New Mutants, been pushed deep into 2019 now. And it's like, it does give you that feel like Marvel and Disney are kind of flexing their muscle to be like, nothing's going on right now. Let's just not.
Right. Yeah.
Because Fox is greenlighting projects left and right. They're greenlighting stuff all over the place. And it's only these Marvel related things that are getting moved around.
Yep. And both those, well, especially New Mutants is like I am super interested in it, and I really hope it works, but it is a new take on the superhero movie, obviously, with its horror slants. And like, I can see Marvel doing a horror movie in their universe, in the Disney Marvel universe, but I can see them wanting it to be their horror movie and not wanting another slant on it. It would not surprise me if it got bumped, and then when Disney finally buys out Fox, New Mutants lands on like their streaming service as like their big release or something. Because that's supposed to, if they bump it enough, it would be, because that's supposed to land like 2019 or 2020.
They're both already positioned to be moved to the streaming service if they launch it in 2019 like they're supposed to. They could easily just write them off as being out of continuity. They don't mean anything.
Yep. We don't care about these. But it gives them a good pull in, you know. You wanted to see New Mutants, now it's here. Like,
yeah. Yep, and there won't be as much of a waste of resources, you know, because a lot of money's been spent on these movies already, you know, and it's like, you know, you feel like you got to put something out. If they move them to the streaming service, they can at least say they did that and cashed in on it. But it's crazy though, because New Mutants, for those who may not have heard everything that's been going on with it, it got moved again, got bumped again, but this time so did Dark Phoenix. Would have been spared the last time the New Mutants got moved. Now it got moved too, but the reports on New Mutants are, you know, we had heard that they were adding a new character. Now we're hearing that as much as 50% of the movie may be reshot, and it may be adding multiple characters. And that they're going back to the horror theme that Josh Boone originally wanted, because apparently the first trailer that came out that looked like a straight up horror movie, which is what he had always been calling it, a straight up horror movie, was not totally indicative of what the movie really was. But they were tailoring it that way because it was so popular at the time. The trailer came out right around the same time as it did. And they were kind of they were tailoring it to look more horror style, so because people are so popular around it, people are so popular right then. So now they're going back into reshoots to make it even more of a horror, which is like, what are you guys doing over there?
Right. Which is,
but then there's
the
John Hamm thing, and then there's the John Hamm thing, you know?
Right.
You know, John Hamm was apparently Mr. Sinister, a villain, one of the greatest ex-villains. Apparently, he was going to shoot a scene as Mr. Sinister in a post-credit
scene. I did not
know
that.
Yes, that was the most recent thing. Came out maybe a day or two ago. Was that John Hamm? John Hamm was supposed to shoot a scene as Mr. Sinister. And apparently that scene still exists, except it's not by John Hamm. It's Antonio Banderas in the role, and it's not Mr. Sinister anymore. Which is like,
oh, okay. That's like, what?
I know. It's like, what the hell is going on? It just seems like there's...
Oh, man, John Hamm is Mr. Sinister. That's great.
That would be awesome.
I like that casting a lot. Yeah.
Maybe we'll still get it. But, I mean, but...
Damn it. Yeah,
it just seems like a mess.
Yeah. Oh, New Mutants is clearly a mess, and I thought Fox had gotten on track. Like, I thought they knew what they were doing
X-Men Apocalypse.
Yeah, and Wolverine was so good, and Days of Future Past was really solid. I thought they and Apocalypse mm-hmm. wasn't, and then they just sort of not. But they, I thought they had gotten on track, and they clearly have not. Like, this just shows they have unless Disney is the one messing with everything. This just shows they have no idea what they're doing.
I think they're freaking out a little bit. I mean. I agree with you. They had such a good last year. Logan, Deadpool, those things really did work out for them really well. And, you know, and it's like, I think this whole Marvel-Disney deal has really messed them up. I think they would have been fine if they had just been left to their own devices to do New Mutants the way Josh Boone wanted, and then to do Dark Phoenix the way they wanted. They probably would have been fine. But it just seems like it seems like that ever since this deal was first proposed, and then it seems like it's going to go through in the next few months. It seems like ever since then, the wheels will come off.
Yeah.
Because there's been so much talk about, well, what's going to happen? Because these movies are starting to feel pointless. Because I think everybody assumes that if the deal goes through, that Disney will reboot in their own way. Because why the hell wouldn't they? The whole thing the way he wants to do it, except for maybe Deadpool. But then if that's the case, you mean you gotta kind of, I don't know. It would seem weird to carry over Deadpool unchanged, but then have everything else be changed.
So, in fairness, Deadpool just showing up and busting through the fourth wall like, yeah, I'm here now. You know, that would be, of all the characters that they could just carry over super easily, Deadpool would clearly be this.
And he'd have free reign to make fun of whatever movies he was in before or whatever X-Men were there before and suddenly aren't there now. And
exactly.
I mean, kind of the way they make fun of X-Men Origins Wolverine without really talking about X-Men Origins Wolverine all that much.
I'd be fine with that.
If Deadpool busts into Avengers 5, no one will care about anything that happened before. They're going to be too busy freaking out that Deadpool just appeared in Avengers 5.
Exactly. Here's what I want. I want all the Avengers to be dead. Everyone's on the ground. And Deadpool and Squirrel Girl show up and save the day.
But you're gonna have Squirrel Girl on your small screen, my friend. So.
Yeah.
You're happy about that.
Maybe.
I assume that show is still happening, right? That New Warrior show?
Yeah, they had casting. That's the last I heard of it. I'm sure.
Yeah,
I think that'll.
Exactly.
What is that? Is that Freeform? Is that another Freeform one?
It is Freeform. It is Freeform. Yeah. And I don't know. It to me, it sounds terrible. But, you know, we'll see.
Yeah. Cloak and Dagger premiered yet?
Squirrel Girl is not a New Warrior, darn it. She's not.
Oh.
She was never a New Warrior. Anyway,
My comic book history is a muddle since 1999. So you guys.
Although the concept is taken from the comics, she's not New Warrior, not really. But I like the girl who's playing her though. It's that girl from the AT&T commercials, right? Or the.
Yeah.
I like her, so we'll see. But anyway, there's something else I want to talk about. Oh, Colin Trevorrow is coming back to direct Jurassic World 3. I wish I could be excited about that, but I don't really like Colin Trevorrow that much anymore. I mean, I was a big fan of Safety Not Guaranteed, his first movie. But, I mean, and I guess he was perfectly fine with Jurassic World. I think he was pretty anonymous in that movie. But the Book of Henry, which was his and really had his fingerprints all over it, was just awful.
Jurassic World felt, I mean, it didn't, I don't know who he, I guess he hasn't done, because I love Safety Not Guaranteed. Jurassic World was, was Milquetoast directing, you know, he was, yes, he put together a solid Jurassic World movie, but it wasn't, I wasn't coming out of it going, that director made that movie, you know, like,
right.
And then Book of Henry was terrible. So I have no idea who he is as a director. Like, it's very confusing.
It's very confusing.
And so, but I mean, there's something to be said for being, it is not easy to put together a massive blockbuster, as we have seen multiple times, especially with Fox superhero movies that have fallen apart. It's not a simple task. I'm not overly excited he got it, but it's not going to theoretically fall apart because of him.
Right. And he's been involved with the stories for all three movies. So, I mean, at least he has that going for him. And frankly, he's not the first director to disappear behind the blockbuster movie. I don't think Jon Favreau has any distinct personality at all as a director.
Yep.
Like in any of his movies.
I mean, Jungle Book was a good movie. He competently made a really, really good Jungle Book movie, like which is saying something.
Absolutely, and he did two Iron Man movies. I mean, he consistently makes hit movies all the time, which is why he keeps working. But does he have a distinct style? No, not at all. I couldn't. If you just showed me a Favreau movie, I couldn't tell you what his style is. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
He points.
I mean, and I don't need Wes Anderson, but like, if you put me in front of a Spielberg movie, I can usually tell it's a Spielberg. Be like,
right. There are directors you can tell, like you can tell a Tarantino, you can tell, and certain other guys, you can tell a Shane Black movie. I mean, there's certain guys you can tell, Favreau, Colin Trevorrow, those guys are two people who that's not necessarily the case. I don't think there's anything else that was really caught my eye this week other than Mark Hamill continuing to talk shit about Star Wars.
The other thing I saw at South by Southwest was the Director and the Jedi, which is the documentary that's on the Blu-ray, which I was disappointed. Yes. So I signed up for it because I thought I didn't realize it was basically a making of documentary that was going on the Blu-ray. I thought it was going to be like something a little bit more. And it is a bit more than that. They definitely put more money into it and did a lot more than the usual making of. But it is just a making of Blu-ray. But the afterwards, Rian Johnson and he came out. It's funny. So the there were two directors on the documentary, and then Luke Skywalker. Mark Hamill came out, and Rian Johnson came out, and so all the questions were for them. No one talked to the directors of the documentary. but like, I mean, he was sitting up there perfectly open about the fact that he did not, I mean, and they were sitting, both of them were sitting next to each other talking about the fact that he did not, that Hamill did not like the direction the character went in, but as an actor, he's like, it's not my character. And as an actor, I thought he did an amazing job delivering the character he had created. And they seemed okay with each other. Now, they could have just been putting on airs and stuff, but like, it was very comfortable.
I don't think Johnson holds a grudge with Mark Hamill because he doesn't necessarily like the way Luke Skywalker was handled in the movie. And I don't necessarily think that Mark Hamill has a grudge against Ryan Johnson for that. I just don't. But that said, I wish Hamill would shut up at this point. I mean, he just – it's or at least I wish people would stop asking him the same questions over and over again.
Yeah.
So he keeps giving the same answers about, I don't like what they did with the character. Now he's talking about, nah, I think there are too many Star Wars movies. It's like they're going to put out a hit on his ass if he doesn't shut up.
Right.
Like, just quiet down, dude. Go do something. Go voice the Joker somewhere for a while. But just stop. We get it. Okay?
In the Q&A, before he went on a 10-minute monologue about it, in the Q&A, he was like, I wish I had never said anything. And right there, I was like, why are you still saying something then? I mean, you're prolonging this conversation.
I never should have said anything. It's like, well, shut up then. He keeps talking about it. You don't have to answer when people keep asking you that question. You don't have to keep answering it. You're perfectly Hamill. Say you don't want to talk about it anymore. I've talked about it enough. You know?
Especially with this movie that is so controversial for whatever reasons. Like, this is not the one, Hamill.
I know. But it still remains controversial. I just tweeted my friends last night. We've been on this texting thread for years, right? Just like me and three other friends. The last few months since December, it's basically turned into an I hate The Last Jedi thread by one member of the group. And he just everything he posts is some new complaint about The Last Jedi. And to the point where I was like, is that what this thread is now? Is it turned into an I hate The Last Jedi thread? Because if so, I'm dropped out. Because I'm tired of hearing about it. I was tired of talking about that movie the first week it came out. Because every day it was a new conversation that I had to have about The Last Jedi, whether it was on TV or radio, whatever. It was like a new conversation about The Last Jedi. And I was like, yeah, I'm done with talking about this movie for now. Yeah, but I mean, that's the way I am for almost every big movie that comes out. I'm tired of talking about the week it's by the same week it comes out. But for The Last Jedi, it was just like,
it was times 100. Everything was just
so much.
I do not understand. I can't wrap my head around. Like, I get some of the complaints. I loved it, right? But I understand some of the complaints, you know, and I pointed those out, but I do not understand the seething hatred because of those points. Like, they are not that bad. And the rest of the film easily, and now we're talking about it.
And it all stems from them not knowing what's going to happen in the next movie. Because the one thing that Star Wars has been is completely predictable. It's always been predictable.
Yeah.
Like a certain pattern, you know, a certain pattern. If it had followed the usual pattern that Abrams had set forth in the first movie, we'd be sitting here wondering, how are they going to defeat Snoke in the third movie? And I don't want that.
Yeah.
I don't want that.
Right. Yeah.
I don't want that story.
That's why it's so good. I'm sorry. That is like taking that move, making those things. And the people who are like, well, I wanted this backstory, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, fine, you can find it. Trust me. There's 11 million books and things, and they're all going to come out, and eventually you're going to get this backstory.
The story has been fleshed out in the books already. Go find it. I mean, it's
yeah,
rare.
Exactly. It's not a secret, right?
Right, exactly.
You don't need the very point is that you don't need this explanation. He is unimportant to the to the dramatic storyline that we're supposed to be following. It's the Red Wedding. This is the Red Wedding of Star Wars.
Exactly.
You know, like, everything you thought we were going in is not the direction we're going in.
Exactly. And we are running out of time. The show is about to end in less than a minute, so we got to get out of here. We're having so much fun that we forgot about it. Thanks, Matt, for tuning in. Everybody go check out Flixus.com. Where you can find Matt. You write there every day, don't you? Are you doing the writing?
Yeah.
Okay. Go check out Flixus.com. You can find Matt's stuff there. And, of course, he'll be back on here soon. Probably the next big movie, maybe around Avengers time. So thanks again, Matt, for tuning in. I appreciate it, man. I always love having you on. All right.
Thanks for having me.
Talk to you later, man. I'll see you at a screening soon, I'm sure.
Yeah.
That's Matt Razak of Flixus.com. And we are running out of time, so I'm going to say thank you for tuning in to Cinema Royale. I am Travis Hobson, the Punch Drunk Critics. Check me out there every day as well. Goodbye.